This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Monday, a Marine Corps birthday Monday. We're going to talk about a lot of things this hour. Medal of Honor Monday is coming up just 30 seconds from now. We're also going to get to the struggles right now of middle class, working class people, and the dangerous spot that puts us in as a nation, really, for both sides, both parties. We'll do that. I am going to get to some emails. There's all kinds of stuff I have to get to, but you know what time it is. It is Monday. Start of the second hour on Monday, and that means we honor a hero. We say his name. We remember it. For many, maybe this is you, maybe this will be the first time you ever heard this name. Maybe this would be the first and only time you ever heard about these deeds. When people go out and earn a Medal of Honor, they write up what he did. They write it up, and everyone can read these. And I would encourage you to do so with family, at work, in school. If you're one of the wonderful teachers who listens, your students will eat this stuff up. Stop political and research these things. But it is important to remember our heroes and what they did, and it serves to inspire future generations to become men like these. Now, I'm sure you already guessed it, but being as how it's the Marine Corps birthday, we are going to honor a Marine here. Before we get to him, I just wanted to explain that this takes place on Okinawa. For World War II history buffs, people who've ever listened to this show for any length of time, you'll already know a lot or most of this, but the war in the Pacific against the Japanese Empire was so unspeakably terrible. And it was unspeakably terrible for really two main reasons. The first one being the environment where they fought. It was, you know, it sounds tropical and nice, but you know what's nice about the tropics? When you're in an air-conditioned hotel and somebody bringing you chicken strips by the pool, you know what's not lovely? When people are trying to kill you and there's everything from yellow fever to malaria to crocodiles that can kill you. The environment was brutal, brutally hot. It was a horrible, horrible place to fight. And I said there were two reasons. The second reason was the Japanese. The Japanese Empire of World War II better thank its lucky stars that Hitler and the Nazis were busy doing unspeakable things all throughout Europe, because the Japanese Empire in World War II was every bit as evil. They just didn't get the pub. They were a militaristic empire. They were all about torture and rape and murder, and it was just what they did. It was what they believed in. It was how they conducted themselves during the war. And they also believed in dying to the last man. They never, ever, ever surrendered en masse. It never happened. Oftentimes, when the Japanese would finally lose an island, they would do so with 99% casualties. You'd have a guy here or a guy there, but they would all die. If they weren't killed in battle, they'd kill themselves. They'd hold grenades to their head. They would just, it was awful. And the Marines and the Army, to give them credit, the Army was very valiant in the Pacific War, fought their way from island to island to island. And the idea was take enough islands, working your way closer to Japan. You wanted to be as close to Japan as possible so you could launch more air raids into Japan. And so you would have an appropriate staging area to finish off the invasion of Japan, if God forbid you had to invade the place.
which brings us to Okinawa, after Iwo Jima, after everything. Really, the final stop pre-Japan was Okinawa. The good news is it's almost over. The bad news is the Japanese knew it was almost over. This was their, in their minds, final chance to keep Americans from killing their families back home. It's what they believed. They believed their families, their entire nation was at stake, and they were going to fight that way. And because this is 1945, they had had an entire war against us to learn. It's very easy to assume that you're the only side with brains. You're the only side that learns. You're just facing a static enemy. He's almost a robot, really. But he's not a robot. He learns what works and what doesn't work. And what they learned was trying to stop America at the beaches does not work. It never worked for them. You're going to get some Americans on the beaches, but you're not going to stop them from landing. It's not possible. America had too many planes, too much naval gunpowder. They would just, they could run you off the beaches and they could land. But you can fight a defense in depth. You find strategic defensive locations on the interior of whatever island you're going to defend, and you turn those into what amount to be underground fortresses. And there, you just kill Americans by the thousand. That was Okinawa, a living hell like you cannot possibly imagine. And that brings us to James Lewis Day, born in East St. Louis, Illinois.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty as squad leader in sustained combat operations against Japanese forces. On the first day, Corporal Day rallied his squad and the remnants of another unit and led them to a critical position forward of the lines of Sugarloaf Hill. Soon thereafter, they came under an intense mortar and artillery barrage that was quickly followed by a ferocious ground attack by some 40 Japanese soldiers. Despite the loss of one half of his men, Corporal Day remained at the forefront, shouting encouragement, hurling grenades, and directing deadly fire, thereby repelling the determined enemy. Reinforced by six men, he led his squad in repelling three fierce night attacks, but suffered five additional Marines killed and one wounded, whom he assisted to safety. Upon hearing nearby calls for corpsman assistance, Corporal Day braved heavy enemy fire to escort four seriously wounded Marines, one at a time, to safety. Corporal Day then manned a light machine gun, assisted by a wounded Marine, and halted another night attack. In this ferocious action, his machine gun was destroyed, and he suffered multiple white phosphorus and fragmentation wounds. He reorganized his defensive position in time to halt a fifth enemy attack with devastating small arms fire. On three separate occasions, Japanese soldiers closed to within a few feet of his foxhole, but were killed by Corporal Day. During the second day, the enemy conducted numerous unsuccessful swarming attacks against his exposed position. When the attacks momentarily subsided, over 70 enemy dead were counted around his position. On the third day, a wounded and exhausted Corporal Day repulsed the enemy's final attack, killing a dozen enemy soldiers at close range. Having yielded no ground, and with more than 100 enemy dead around his position, Corporal Day preserved the lives of his fellow Marines and made a significant contribution to the success of the Okinawa campaign. Corporal Day inspired the efforts of his outnumbered Marines to defeat a much larger enemy force, reflecting great credit upon himself and upholding the highest traditions of the Marine Corps and the United States Naval Service. Corporal Day thought he was going to die. He was alone because every time he got help, they would be killed. he would roll the grenades down the hill. He didn't want to shoot oftentimes when he heard them coming at him at night. He would roll the grenades down the hill so as not to expose his exact location, listening to the grenades blow up Japanese soldiers in front of him. I just told you about the Japanese Empire. Corporal Day was undoubtedly aware of what would happen should, God forbid, he be knocked out or wounded and the Japanese get a hold of him alive. I will spare you the details of what happened to Marine after Marine, soldier after soldier in that unfortunate situation, but he would not have died quickly. It would have been bad. And yet for 3 days, he sat up there murdering Japanese soldiers. That's amazing. And you know what I think he deserves on this birthday? Happy birthday, Marines. Happy birthday, Day. Happy birthday to all of you. That is the kind of legacy left behind by heroes greater than us. Speaking of heroes, you have heard me discuss Mac V. Sog in Vietnam multiple times. Ridiculous bravery. Over 50% dead. Casualty rates, the likes of which really have never been seen, certainly the highest by a mile in Vietnam. You didn't survive. You just didn't survive. The guy who runs Pure Talk did two tours with Mac V. Sog. How could you have a company that is so overwhelmingly patriotic? How's that possible? That's what Pure Talk is. It's patriotism. They hire Americans. No one does that anymore. You know about them giving rescue dogs to veterans with PTSD, giving out American flags on Independence Day. Does Verizon do that? AT&T, T-Mobile? My cell phone company does. You want to save some money and give your money to a much better place? Pick up your phone, dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. An American will get you switched over during the break. #250. Say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Reminding you, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So let's discuss some economic things before we get to other emails and other parts of the show and goofing off and things like that. I do want to discuss economic things. Now, I'm not in big, nerdy terms. It's not that. Your life, my life, the cost of things in this life. And so I got this email. This is about the shutdown that is now coming to an end, not quite over yet, obviously, but coming to an end. And here it is. Jesse, the subject of this one is, where are my firings? Another empty threat / promise from the Trump administration. I was promised mass firings because of the shutdown. How many people have been fired? 3? I'm disgusted by the lack of spine. Make them feel pain. Enough is enough. His name is Chris. Okay. So I also wanted large numbers of government employees fired. Yes, the Trump administration said, if you shut down the government, we will fire large numbers of government employees. And no, that did not happen. That's a very, very fair criticism. But I wanted to use this email as an opportunity to explain something. Because I'm actually about to insult a couple things that have been proposed economically by the White House. So I needed to get something out of the way first. You know that I don't wave pom-poms. I don't do it. You know that I'm more than willing to insult really everybody in the GOP. Happy to do it, and have yelled about Trump before when he does something I disagree with, and I always will. And if you don't like it, you can pound sand. That's what I believe in. But here's what I know. I know that the mass importation of foreigners is destroying this country. It is winning elections for open communists. It is the reason, it's not the only reason for so many problems that affect your life, but it is a big reason for so many problems that affect your life. If you could snap your fingers and deport 50 million foreigners, all our problems would not disappear, but all of our problems would get better, significantly better overnight. They would. It's one of those rare things that solves not everything, but goes a long way to solving everything. Magic pills are rare. You deport 50 million foreigners, housing gets affordable like that. Imagine when you're not competing with 50 million foreigners. Healthcare, affordable like that. What do you think happens to tuition? What do you think happens to crime, cleanliness? What do you think happens to the Democrat Party if you deport 50 million foreigners? It's almost, I don't want to oversell it, but it's almost this magic bullet that does everything. Okay? So, what's that have to do with the government firings and whatnot? The Trump administration, maybe you remember the final year of his first term. It was very hard on Trump. Why? Because Donald Trump, 15 days to slow the spread, Donald Trump allowed himself to be manipulated by very evil people into destroying the economy that was going well, and I was very angry about it. Vice versa. The Trump administration has gotten 2 million foreigners out of the country in 10 months. That's not 20 million, I know. It's not 10. It's not the 50 we need. Tell me another administration that has done that. And it's not just that. They have gotten 2 million foreigners out. 1.5 of those are self-deportations, but still out. I don't care how you get out, just get out. On top of that, they are obviously, when you look at the ICE hirings, when you look at the various things they're doing, they are building a deportation machine that will make what's already happened into the warm-up act. They're warming up. They're learning what works, what doesn't work, what personnel they need. We've already heard, remember we discussed this on the show, a huge leadership shakeup at ICE in major ICE hubs. The Trump administration was not happy with the pace of things. They started firing people. And what do you think they're doing things like this for?
Because you got over 200,000 applications in. How many of those are you going to take, and how quickly can you get them on the street? Because you need a lot of backup right now.
We got it. 200,000 applications. Now, those people still have to be screened, still have to be trained. So that'll take time, too. I get that. That was not me telling you that I am going to sit here every day and wave Donald Trump's pom-poms. In fact, like I said, I'm just about to insult a couple things that have come out of the White House. I'll explain. However, as long as the Trump administration remains committed to deporting as many foreigners in his 4 years as possible, he is going to get more leeway from me than he would otherwise. I was probably more critical of him in the first term than I otherwise would have because of the COVID lockdowns. While he's deporting millions of foreigners, he's going to get more leeway from me than ever before. That's not to say it's perfect. It's not to say I didn't want to see 50,000, 100,000, a million government employees fired. I wanted it too. We didn't get it. It sucks. I'll give him some leeway. Except when it comes to 50-year mortgages. Next.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're gonna love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, fantastic Monday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can email it, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So before we get to those emails and the airports and the all kinds of things, Jimmy Kimmel, his wife leaving her family, before we get to any of that other stuff. I'll just read this. Something we've read before on the show. I want to read it again. 15 million more adults under the age of 35 are living with their parents compared to a decade ago, that's per Fortune magazine. 15 million. Now, I could sit here and I could read stats like that for the next hour and a half of the show. I could. Because the stats are, well, they all point to the same thing. Middle class people are being pushed down into the lower classes, and lower class people flat out aren't making it. Younger people are not finding, younger Americans, I should say, if you're from Somalia, you're good, but younger Americans are not finding jobs. They are graduating college, many of them in debt, and they cannot find a good job to even go live on their own, let alone start paying off the debt. And all the statistics point to this fact. Younger people today, they do not have the same opportunities older generations did. America for younger people today is less affordable than their parents had, than their grandparents had, than their great-grandparents had. That's just simply a fact. It is. Can't find a house. Can't find this. Now, this is a bad, obviously a terrible situation. And it's terrible for a laundry list of reasons. One of those reasons may be, well, your life is worse and you're finding goals you had unachievable. Well, when I'm 28 years old, I want to own a home and have a wife and a dozen kids. And I understand that. But it's also terrible for this reason. When life becomes unaffordable, not just houses either, car insurance, home insurance, just health insurance. When life becomes unaffordable, what will inevitably happen is people inside the government will promise to hand you money in one way or another to make it better. They will. Now, the history of this is not often well known. You know it, but normies don't know it. Normies don't understand how COVID and the massive printing of money caused all the inflation that made life unaffordable. Normies don't know that. Normies don't understand how much more affordable health insurance was before Obamacare. Normies don't know that. You know what normies know? They can't afford it. Can't afford a house. Can't afford this. Feeling the squeeze. And, of course, Democrats, who really authored so many of these things, most definitely the healthcare one, Democrats are aware you can't afford it. That's why they tried to make the whole shutdown thing about health insurance, healthcare. Chuck Schumer, when he was whining about it.
Democrats have been fighting to get the Senate to address the healthcare crisis. This bill does nothing to ensure that that crisis is addressed. I am voting no, and I will keep fighting.
Now, I need you to walk with me with something, and this might be a painful walk, all right? It might be, but just walk with me. We have the midterm elections coming up. In 2028, we have a big presidential election. If you had to handicap it, you'd say J.D. Vance versus Gavin Newsom. Doesn't matter. Big presidential election coming up. Now, I'm not talking about you, nor am I concerned about you. You're going to be fine, but you're a normie. You're one of these weird independents. You voted for Obama and then Trump and then Biden and then Trump again. You're just kind of all over the place. You're just a low info normie. Democrats are out there loudly campaigning on the cost of health insurance. Now, stop. Don't start screaming at me and screaming at the radio, but they're the ones who caused it with Obamacare. I know. We're not talking about you. You're informed. I'm talking the low infos. Democrats are running on the cost of health insurance. The cost, we just had to renew our health insurance here at iHeart. It's just unbelievable how crappy the insurance is now for what you have to pay for. It's unbelievable. It's horrible. And Democrats, their message is, you're paying too much for health insurance. You're paying too much for health insurance. You're paying too much for health insurance. Do you think that is going to have a receptive audience? I'm not worried about you. With the normies, is that message going to land well with normies? Of course it will. So here's where we end up in a serious pickle. How do you answer that? What's your political answer for that if you don't want Democrats to take the House, the Senate, and the White House in 2028? This is where Republicans will fall into traps. They will fall into what I would probably classify as a populist trap. They will try to hand out different stuff. Try to control and manipulate the market in different ways. Not the same ways, so we can claim superiority, but Trump over the weekend floated a $2,000 dividend from tariffs for normal Americans. Of course, he even put in there excluding the wealthy, not including high-income people. What? They've already attempted, Scott Bessent and others, attempted to try to walk it back. But don't pay me $2,000 of my own money. This is why you get things like Josh Hawley. We played it for you before when he's talking about Amazon.
Their CEO is getting paid. Let me make sure I get this right. In 2024, Amazon's president earned $40.1 million in total compensation. 40.1. The previous year, he'd earned merely 29.2. I mean, that's an unbelievable. That's great work if you can get it. That's an unbelievable raise. Only problem is, according to their own financial disclosures, Amazon's average worker, average employee worldwide is making $37,181. $37,181. So that's a C-suite to employee ratio of 1,078. To one.
That kind of wealth envy crap is going to have a receptive audience. But that's not the solution. Democrats don't have good solutions. They're going to make everything worse. But handing people more stimmy checks makes everything worse. Whining about the pay of the CEO at Amazon just creates more wealth envy and makes everything worse. Populism can be great at times, and it can be completely disastrous at times. Headline, Trump administration considering 50-year mortgages. This is, of course, to get the average monthly cost down. Do you have any idea what you would pay for a $200,000 house in the end after you got done paying off a 50-year mortgage? In the interest of making sure Jewish producer Chris doesn't stroke out on the air, I'm not going to elaborate on what you would pay, but it would be, you don't want to know. I'll just put it to you that way. You don't want to know. These aren't solutions. These are temporary government throwing the starving peasants a loaf of bread solutions. They don't tackle the fundamental problem. Until government spending and money printing is addressed, all these problems consist. They'll go on forever. Now, again, I hate to beat a dead horse, but deporting 50 million foreigners will sure go a long way to solving a lot of this, including health insurance, when you don't have to keep paying for the health insurance of illegals who flood the emergency room. That will certainly help, but that's another story entirely. Until then, you might want to grab yourself a Byrna launcher to make sure you can at least fight one off when he tries to stab you in the parking lot. Byrna is the self-defense solution for everyone. If you are like me and you already know I conceal carry, I want a non-lethal option. I don't want to kill the homeless guy who's pooping on the hood of my car when I leave the studio at night. You maybe don't have a concealed carry option. Burna is legal for everybody. Shoots these pepper balls or tear gas balls. Did you know this? You know something crazy? You know you don't even necessarily have to hit them with it. Been situations where you can just shoot the ground in front of them and this pepper ball cloud just freaking destroys them. They live. You live, more importantly, and you don't get arrested. BYRNA, Byrna.com/Jesse. Byrna.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Monday. You can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. I'm just in such a good mood today. I can't imagine what it is.
That's probably it, don't you think, Chris? That's probably it. Be safe out there tonight, Marines. All right. And in fact, I hate to even do this because, you know, I don't want to be the fun police. And I certainly am not one who's ever, ever, ever going to judge you for any mistakes you make, any ones you've made in the past, any ones you're going to make tonight, Marines. I'm not going to judge you. I'm just going to offer a little bit of advice from time to time about this or that. You can take it. You can leave it. But I saw this article and I wanted to address it. It's from the New York Post. Kind of a weird thing to even write, but I got it. The best and worst airports for getting tipsy during travel are revealed. Okay. This is the New York Post telling you where to get hammered, which airport. Now, let's talk. And again, this is a note. This is a judgment-free zone. I'm the guy who used to sit in the dark when I got back from Iraq with the blinds closed and the lights out, getting drunk by myself in the living room, sitting in a chair in the middle of the living room. I'm the guy who used to get road beers on the way home. I'm not judging you at all. Not at all. This is just an assessment of what is worth it and what is not. Let me ask you something. If you have a history of boozing it up, what percentage would you put on it? What percentage of the time is it worth it? And by the way, I'm not going to say, again, I'm not fun policing. I'm not going to say it's never worth it. You're at a concert, you're having an extra glass of wine with your wife, I'm not saying that it's never been fun. Not what I'm saying. Would you at least agree with me that especially as you get older, those percentages go down? The juice maybe not worth the squeeze? You with me still? Okay. You know what that percentage falls to when you are traveling by air? Zero. The percentage falls to zero. I do not understand this concept. This is a concept I actually rejected back in my boozing days when I was super young. I came to this realization. Okay, so you're going to go into the airport bar, Applebee's or Chili's or something. You're going to crush 10 beers at Chili's before you get on a flight to Chicago. Now that you're all lubed up from 10 beers at Chili's, what are things you would normally do? Let's say you were at the house. I will tell you what I will be doing tonight when I get home. I'm going to watch a Marine Corps documentary about Peleliu. Someone just told me there's one on Netflix. I'm watching it tonight. That might be something you do after 10 beers. Maybe you call up a friend. Hey, come watch baseball. Baseball season's over. Come watch football tonight. It's Monday Night Football. I know that. Hey, that might be something you do. Maybe you turn on music, play video games. Maybe you text an ex. Bad idea. there are a variety of things you can do at home. None of those options are available to you when you are traveling. You're going to get on an airplane in a gigantic steel tube with annoying, smelly strangers. What are you planning on doing? Are you going to keep drinking? I've had people yell at me, well, just keep drinking. Okay, so you're what? You're going to pass out and vomit on the flight? That's the plan? Oh, no, no, I'll stop. Okay, so on top of flying being super miserable, you're going to add a mid-flight hangover in there? You know what those 10 beers need to do? They have to come out. Have you used the bathroom in an airplane before? Have you gone in? Do you feel like going 10 times in there? I don't understand the appeal. Oh. And then when you get where you're going, what's waiting for you? Are you walking right off the airplane and into your living room? No. Maybe you're one of these savages who checks a bag. I wouldn't know. I refuse to do such a thing. The Kellys don't check bags now. We've made a commitment. Let's say you're at least me and you don't check a bag. I live an hour from the airport. Now, my hangover is getting worse and worse. I'm more and more exhausted. Now, even if I'm not waiting at baggage claim for a bag, I'm getting in a car and I'm going to drive an hour. Am I even okay to drive? That's unsafe. Let's say I'm getting a cab or an Uber. Let's at least say I'm being responsible. I have to sit in the back and listen to Muhammad for an hour as he drives. What, Chris? What? Am I wrong? Am I wrong? Oh, come on. Everybody knows who runs the freaking Uber companies and cab companies, for Pete's sake. I mean, you might as well get in with the prayer rug. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Chris, it's fine. Anyway, I now have to ride for an hour. There are weird smells. It's not worth it. I'm not trying to judge. Like I said, I want to be clear about this. I'm not trying to fund police. And you want to belly up to the bar and have a martini shaken, not stirred? I think that's totally acceptable. If you're going to make that 3, 5, I don't understand it. I don't see how it's worth it. Chris, am I wrong? Chris isn't something. Even Chris agrees. He's not some Puritan. Chris will have some booze every now and then. Corey, am I wrong? Corey gets it. It's not worth it. I don't understand the air travel, the fascination with air travel and boozing. Maybe it's because I'm a loner. Maybe it's because I'm a homebody. Maybe what, Chris? What? What? He agrees. Everyone agrees. Now, let's discuss something, because there's this way of thinking on the left that you're uninformed. Hang on.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.